1850 715 815.
Hello, good afternoon, and you're very welcome to Liveline. And 51551 is our text number, and joe at rt.ie. The weather has changed dramatically. Well, it's distinctly summer's atmosphere last week, and now it's back to normal. The autumnal September weather is kicking in. It's getting colder during the day. It's getting much colder at night. And that, of course, makes us all think not just of ourselves and hats and overcoats, but people who are homeless in this weather as it gets worse, as we move very quickly, it seems, into winter. James, good afternoon.
Afternoon, Joe.
Where are you living at the moment, James?
In my car.
And where do you park your car? I don't want the exact location, obviously.
No, in a library, where it's safe.
In the car park of a public library?
Yes.
Okay. And what's your daily routine?
I wake in the morning, probably about 5-6. I get a cup of coffee in one of the garages, and I go to one of the local DCC health clubs.
Dublin City Council, swimming pool or whatever. That's where you do your...
That's a shower and shave there, and get myself dressed and ready for the day.
Okay, and what unfolds? What is the day?
From there, I'd probably go into the library, charge my phone, I have an iPad, charge that. I have a number of hospital appointments, due to an ongoing surgeries, and I might go for a bit of a walk on the crutches at the moment, and I'd probably knock into one or two friends up around the area, and maybe a family member might come down and see me, or friends come down and see me with a bit of food, and maybe a packet of cigarettes, and I'm very lucky that I have that.
Okay, how long have you been living in your car?
It's coming up 15 weeks this week.
And how did it come to this?
A number of different things arose. I was living with a friend of mine. I was renting off him for a number of years, and he got offered a lot of money for the house that he owned it and I was living in, and he sold. And I had no...
Is your phone gone there, James? Is the battery gone? Are you there, James?
The accommodation.
Yeah, sorry, you're gone. Sorry, you said we lost you there when you said not enough money, I presume, to get an alternative accommodation.
There was never kind of 2 months, 3 months monies up front with the friend of mine that I was staying with. So it was just on a weekly basis. But now, as we all know, in order to gain accommodation, you need a lump sum in order to get it. So I approached the social welfare and they gave me forms to fill out in order to try and receive HAP or to get onto the homeless list. And unfortunately, I'm not able to avail of any of that because I have a family home, which my ex-wife and children live in.
Okay. And that's why you're paying a mortgage on, is it?
Yeah, well, at the moment I don't, but the ex-partner does, yeah.
Okay, and you mentioned your crutch.
Yes.
What's that situation?
I'm just recently after coming out of surgery on an ongoing injury to my lower leg. I had to get metalwork and that removed due to an infection that was in it.
Okay.
I'm on crutches at the moment, and I'm just waiting to find out whether I have to get an amputation or not at the lower leg.
So, and this is a pre-existing condition, is it? Or pre-existing
from a
injury?
Early 20s.
Well, that's hardly, because you sent us a photograph. One of is that you in hospital with the...
It is.
...covered in blood?
Yeah.
That's the leg, unfortunately. And then there's a photograph of the inside of your car. Are you saying with your... very seriously injured leg, I presume, I haven't tried it, but I presume the only way you can sleep in a car is across the back seat of a car.
No, I can put the front down on the driver's side, but the problem is that I can't elevate the leg.
Of course, because it's now in the footwell of...
Yeah.
Yeah, where you're...
Yeah.
Now, services, help, assistance, what's the pitfalls, what's the hurdles?
Well, I'm able to use the facilities in the library.
Do they know you're living in their car park, so to speak?
I'm not going to say yeah, but indirectly, yes.
Okay. And like, well, any library I've ever encountered, the staff are invariably brilliant and helpful.
Yes,
and wouldn't go out of their way to do anyone a bad turn. In fact,
no.
To do the opposite.
Exactly.
So the library staff are
accommodating.
Yeah.
That's what I'd say.
Okay. Now, by the way, does the car park of that library, does it get locked at night time?
Some evenings, yeah.
Did they put up bollards or to stop?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. Do you feel safe there at night time? Is it dark?
It is after a certain hour. In fairness, the lights are left on in the periphery for me in the evening times,
nice.
Up until
that's
a certain
good.
Hour.
Okay.
Yeah. And I can't.
But are you near a pub?
There's a number of pubs around.
Okay, I'm not saying there's nothing. But, like, people do leave pubs at 11:30,
yeah,
sometimes they can be in high spirits.
That's always an issue. But thank God so far there's been no problems.
Okay, and go back now to the catch-22 that you've encountered when you try and get help.
There's two catch-22s. One is because of the pain relief that I'm on.
Mm-hmm.
I had alcohol was an issue for a while. I won't dispute that. Thank God, at the moment and for the last while, it hasn't been. I'm linked in with a number of different services, AA, the Fellowship, and
I'm
also linked in with Stan Hope.
Which is an alcohol.
And drug rehabilitation centre.
Yeah.
And I have to say they're fantastic for anyone. But that's where my counsellor is located. He has tried to get me onto a couple of residential places. And she can't, for the simple reason that the pain relief is not accepted onto any of the residential programmes, which is... fair enough. You can't make one rule for one person and different rule for others.
But it's your prescribed pain relief.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. Because one of the lower ones that I take is Tylex, and literally when the body breaks it down, similar to sulfadine, it shows up as either heroin or cocaine.
Codeine.
So that would be one of the lower ones. Then I'm on Tramadol, and I'm also on Oxynorm. I'm on Lyrica for pains in the back, which I only found out this morning and may end up having to go in to get back surgery, which is going to be a big, big problem for me.
And just to go back, I know you said, unfortunately, your marriage broke down and there was alcohol issues, but and you mentioned the motorbike accident. Did the motorbike accident, was that the spiral that did you lose your job after that, or...
No.
Okay.
That was in the early 20s.
Oh, okay. When you were in your early 20s. Okay.
Yeah.
So, how did you... Is there a catalyst? When did you lose a job? Did you...
The job itself wrapped up back in 2013, which would have been the downturn. It was in construction.
Okay.
The company itself stayed afloat for a number of years. And... It just came to a head where it was no longer feasible for me to stay in employment.
And if you're living in a car, I can't begin to think one. You explained you're washing and you're bathing and that be used the local swimming pool or whatever. But
and then for washing the clothes, I use the garages where, thank God, you have them facilities now where you can
these new
wash
machines,
your clothes.
Yeah. Now, what about food?
The family members and friends drop up some, otherwise I use the local shops. And I have a flask for a tea or a coffee.
And what was last night like? Because the weather has changed, not is.
Yeah, it most certainly has. Last night it was warm enough. The previous night was colder. I have a duvet in that in the boot of the car. So I take that out as I need it. I can turn on the engine. I can turn on the bit of heat, but unfortunately then that increases the fuel bill.
Of course, yeah. Is the car mobile, by the way?
It is. It is. But I can't really drive too much now at the moment while I'm on the purchase. Yeah. Yeah.
So on the one hand, you want to get into a rehabilitation course, but because you're on prescribed medication...
I can't avail of any of the services there.
Because you're not drug-free as such, even though you're not.
Even though the drugs were never an issue. And then the other issue then that I have, from Stanhope, they linked me in with the Simon community, who were good enough to come into the hospital and visit me and fill out a few forms and see if I could avail of their services. They do have accommodation for me, but unfortunately, because I won't... or because I have my name on a mortgage, I'm not allowed to avail of the services there. The bank want me to, or I'd have to remove my name off the mortgage in order to avail of it legally by solicitor. And when I approached the bank themselves, they as much as told me that the foreclosure proceedings would happen.
Because if they see one party, I'm presuming, I don't know, right? If they see one party who was on the mortgage withdrawing from the mortgage, they say, well, only 50% of those people who are paying for the mortgage are now paying for it, so...
Yeah, and unfortunately the ex-partner was only part-time, so that's never going to happen. They're never going to allow me to pay the name off the mortgage, regardless.
And, OK, you're 14, 15 weeks living in the car. Where were you living before that?
I was renting one or two places on short-term rentals. And then it just came to the stage where I was no longer able to do it. I had friends and family helping me out for a good while. And there's only so much you can avail of people's goodwill, to be honest. I suppose a bit of embarrassment and everything else kind of came into it, where I actually thought that the state itself could give me some sort of handout, for the simple reason that the amount of years I'm working since I was 15. And I paid an awful lot of tax. And personally, through other means, for other subcontractors and everything else throughout the years, you know. I actually thought there was a bit of help there for me. And unfortunately, there's not. Every door is closed.
And... I know you're appealing now, but how far you can go in appealing? Have you been on to local politicians? Or?
Yeah, I have. I was on to Sean Haughey's office because he's the local TD for here. Yeah. And absolutely no help. I was given the names and numbers of the politicians in the area where the family home is, but sure, I can't live there, so that's of no use to me either. You know, and when I did contact them anyway, no one's got back to me. It's a week and a half now, and I'm still waiting on the phone call.
And so, what do you think your prospects are? Obviously, your health prospects are with the leg, and now you're back.
That I don't know. That's in the hands of the gods at the moment. And that's being perfectly honest, because there is absolutely no other avenue. I have a friend that's willing to put me up for another week or two, but... There's only so many times you can put your hand out.
But James, if you go living in a car, if you are living in a car and you go in for surgery, you can't go back living in a car after surgery.
Well,
even for recuperation.
Well, there's rehabilitation that would happen after the amputation, and that's fair enough. I'd say how many weeks, months, I'm not too sure. But I'm sure that depends on the recovery and whatever. But that is the prospect for when I come out.
That is the prospect.
And there is accommodation there for me in the likes of Stanhope and with Simon. And I've also been in with the outreach team and the Rough Sleepers up on Table Street, who have been very good. They had accommodation for me, but unfortunately the name is on the mortgage, so that's...
See that as an asset.
Yes, exactly. Which isn't really an asset. It's a rope around my neck. But it facilitates my children and the ex-partner. So, you know, at one time, you know, I didn't think things were going to end up the way they were. I was trying to do the best for me and my family and children. Things didn't work out. Yeah. And now...
That's happened,
This is the situation, yeah. you know.
You're still, on the one hand, you sound quite young. I think you're, are you in your 40s?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's young, 40s. Very young.
Yeah.
And two, you sound a little bit more upbeat than one might expect for someone that's gone through the challenges and burdens
I wouldn't let things like that get to me. On the outside, don't get me wrong, on the inside, yeah, things do sometimes, you know. But, on the outside, you have to keep, you know, outlook.
Okay, the line is deteriorating. There, stay there for a sec, James. Now, this is not related, but I want to bring in Dave, because Dave has contacted us about a different situation, and actually we'll go to it after this break. Stay there, James, but I want Dave to tell his story as well. I'm 51551.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
And Joe at rt.ie, we're talking to James, who's living in his car for the last 4 months nearly at this stage as we head into winter. He parks it in the car park of a public library, and in fairness, the public library seemed to be absolutely brilliant to him in terms of, obviously, it's open every day. It is a lifeline anyway for so many people, not just for the books, but for the staff and the company and the facilities, the resources, be it plugs or be it internet or newspapers or whatever. But Dave has contacted us as well. Dave, good afternoon.
Yeah, hello. How are you?
Good, thanks, Dave. What prompted you to contact us?
Well, I was living in Germany for 35 years,
mm-hmm.
and I was doing some jobs there, you know, landscape gardening.
Right.
And I contacted COPD, and last year, my German doctor told me that it's the last step now. In German, they let the Stufe, which means the oxygen mask, and then... Mm-hmm. The bottle with you, and I told him that I would like to come home at some stage, and you know, to be buried here in Cork, where and I
it's
come
a,
from.
Just for COPD, it's a chronic inflammatory lung disease, isn't it?
And I'm at the last stage now, and so he put me on steroids called prednisolone, so I could fly here and safe home from Mayo. Very good people, they organised that I would get a flat from Cork City Council.
Okay.
Where I grew up in Cork, where I was born and reared, in the Marsh, the middle parish.
Mm-hmm.
And City Hall did put me up the list, and I'm grateful for that, very grateful. But, you know, with COPD in Germany or other, many other countries, if you're going for a flat, then they would know COPD it's a bad one. So you sleep in one room and you have a little kitchen in another half. Okay. They moved me in. I didn't know this in advance. They moved me into a little room, and there's a fridge, a sink, and a cooker. And one window, the cooker's right next to the window, and then there's my bed a couple of feet away. There's about 40 people living in the complex. Everybody has problems. I'm surrounded by walls full of fungus. I sent you the photographs, and mold in the walls. And I went on and spoke about it to a few people, and that was okay. And then they sort of covered up the fungus and the mold with a type of wood, plywood, and they put wallpaper on that.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it seems that they believe the damage is hidden. I'm trying to sleep in this little room. I can't. I gave them all my tests, City Hall housing, in German, my lung tests, and I translated everything to English, and I felt they did not accept it because I put in for a transfer on humanitarian grounds and medical grounds. And
but Dave, just kind of, you lived for 35 years in Germany,
yes,
and Russia, you say you visited as well. But and I just caught a glimpse of it there a few minutes ago. You're obviously fluent in German, are you?
Oh yes.
Okay.
Yes, yes.
And why did you leave Germany, given we're told their health service is second to none?
I had a great place in Germany. When they put me on a Erwerbsminderung Rente, which is basically like disability pension in Ireland. And then they put me in a Salter system, and I got a... I don't expect the same here. I don't expect the same treatment. But they put me into a two-room flat with a big kitchen and a big bathroom and a balcony. I wanted... My health is failing because of the COPD, and I wanted to be buried in Cork, you see. That's the reason I came here. And I even had a dog in Germany, a person, Jack Russell. And here, the place in Cork where I moved into, I didn't know it was going to be a little room with a cooker. And they caught me up. I didn't know there was a no-dog policy. Mm. So I even left my dog in Germany. And I came here, and I'm sleeping in this, trying to sleep in this little room. Okay. I want to be buried in my own city, you see? That's basically why I came back. I didn't know in advance that I would be sleeping in a little room with a sink, a fridge and a cooker. And the Mercy Hospital here, I was in for lung tests on the list, and they were for... and since I'm living here because of the fungus and the mould, I'm getting migraine headaches every day.
Okay.
I put in for a transfer, housing refused, I put in an appeal. All these months I've been doing tests at the Mercy for migraine and for me lung tests, and I've been handing them up at housing City Hall. The head doctor at Mercy Hospital wrote letters to City Hall that I should be transferred immediately. My own GP sent letters that I should be transferred. My own GP wrote to City Hall, I'm going into depression and I'm suicidal even. They wrote back nothing for months and months. I thought I was on the waiting list for a transfer. Now, finally, last week, there was an email to Safe Home in Mayo, who helped me get here. Really good people.
Okay. Sorry, Dave. I want to come back to this. If you say you want to die in Cork. You say you want to be buried in Cork.
Yeah,
no
yeah,
one wants
yeah.
to die. But you want to be buried in Cork.
Yeah.
But was it worth it giving up what sounded like fantastic accommodation in Germany, where you live for 35 years and obviously well settled, to come back to Cork where there isn't guaranteed, well, and the accommodation you got isn't at all satisfactory, as you're stating. Is it that you want to be buried in Cork, or bluntly, you want to be here for your last days?
For my last days, and then be buried.
And have you got family in Cork?
I do, yeah, I do.
So is it about not being alone when you're fading, to use your own phrase?
Well, I just wanted to come home and put the last few years and then, you know, just go through the streets and go through the fields with a dog until the time comes, like, you know. And I was planning that it would be in a few years from now, but where I'm now living, I know I'm not going to survive this winter. I always have to leave the one window open. There's no air. There's no oxygen. Yeah. There's no ventilation in the room. And when I fry something on the cooker's right next to the window, when I fry something or boil something, everything, the wind comes in and blows everything right onto the bed. It's...
And
the place looks good, but it's a health hazard, you know.
And was you worried, Dave, that if you had stayed in Germany, that you would have, the possibility is that you would have had to spend your last days alone?
Yeah. Well, you know, I was over there and everything was good, but I knew the situation was difficult here at home. But I thought, you know, I'll go through some problems for the first weeks and then, you know, everything will pick up and I'll get on with life for the last few years. But from the moment I'm here, I'm in this little room and for the first few days I did cook.
Now, you say in your contact with us that you were deeply affected by the death of a friend of yours.
Oh, yeah.
yeah. that you're going, George Harrington. What yeah, what happened? Yeah.
When I came back, some old friends of mine told me that a next neighbour of mine, I come from the Colgate in Cork. It's probably the most famous part of Cork. Yeah, yeah. And my mother came from here, my grandmother's, and the families in those days, you know, they go back centuries yeah. in this district. And he was a neighbour of mine when I was a kid. He was a few years older than me, all his brothers and sisters. And when I came back, I heard he was found in a flat in a part of Cork called The Glen.
Mm-hmm.
You probably heard of the hurling team, the Glen Rovers.
Yeah.
And it's that district. And he was found in April, his body, in this little place. And the coroner said he had been dead since last September. So
six,
that meant all
months.
Over Christmas and New Year's Eve, yeah. he was his body was in that little flat. 6 months. 6 months before anybody found him or missed him. And I was just back and I heard about it and I made it to his removal. His coffin was closed.
Mm-hmm.
It seems he was not in a...
No, I understand, yeah. Yeah. And has that, that has deeply affected you because you think
it did, yeah.
that might be your fate?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, you know, the place I'm living in, if... You know, I'm depressed and I'm very angry that they moved me into a place like this with their stage COPD. I mean, they have a nurse here and she should have known. City Hall should have known.
But you're, yeah, I think people will be shocked when you tell us your age.
I'm 66. I'd be 64 in March.
Well, that's young. That is young these days.
Yeah. Well, I was thinking I'd get another 8 years out of this, or 10 years even, with the COPD. But I you know, it's the first time in my life I face facts, and I know I'm not going to survive this winter. I know it. You know?
And I
was on the Berlin Wall the night I came down, you know, 89.
Incredible.
September.
Yeah, that's, yeah.
And I survived all of that, and, but I know now that, you know,
and what brought you to Germany in the first place? And Russia, I see. You worked all over Germany and Russia.
Well, I was with a company in Germany, landscape gardening.
Yeah.
And with the fall of communism, the company branched out and we went through Romania, Bulgaria, doing jobs, you know, with landscaping and right up to Russia. And, yeah.
So you have an outdoor disposition, obviously.
Yeah.
And do you get out now? Can you venture out much?
I try and get out every day. There's a family who live around the corner. They have a little Jack Russell, and I knock at their door, and they let me take their Jack Russell out you know. But I can walk for maybe 7 or 10 minutes with the Jack Russell, and then I have to sit down and take a good breather, and then we do another 7 or 10 minutes, and so I do this every day. And all night then I sit outside on a bench because I can't stay in this. If I stay in this room for more than 2 hours, the migraine headaches become worse. Every day since the 12th of May, I've got migraine headaches because of the... the doctor said it's from the mould and fungus.
From what you say, Dave, you have your letters from the medic saying the conditions you're living in are not at all suitable for a man with stage 3 COPD.
Yeah,
but again, they're not having much impact at this stage.
No. City Hall, everything was sent to City Hall, everything. Okay. And my GP and the lung specialist from the Mercy Hospital wrote especially that I should be transferred to a ground floor with ventilation. I wrote in my transfer request many addresses of empty places.
Yeah.
And sometimes they told me these will not be given out until next year. Now I found out they're putting in new fireplaces and they will be given out next month. So, you know, and then finally, after months and months, the woman who was the allocations officer, can I say her name?
No, I leave names out of it at the moment.
Okay,
yeah.
I leave the name out. The allocations officer, she wrote that in an email that I'm not even on the list. They took me off the housing list when they moved me in here to this place surrounded by fungus and surrounded by mould with a cooker and a fridge, and they took me off the housing list because they said my accommodation is now adequate.
Okay.
Their wards, my accommodation for a 63-year-old man with COPD last stage, the accommodation is adequate. And they broke the contract immediately. The contract is for ground floor accommodations, and they put me on the first floor.
Okay.
There's a little lift, and I can't use it because even though it's only from ground floor to first floor, I can't use the lift because I collapse in there. So I use the steps.
And you collapse in a lift, why? Is it?
I collapsed in this room twice, and the emergency had to come for me. I've been in the Mercy Hospital with the emergency wagon, came to this little room, and five times...
The ambulance, what do you reckon?
Yeah, and five times...
Why do you call it the emergency wagon? Is that the German translation of it or something?
Yeah.
That's right, Todd. Yeah. Okay.
That's it. And also five times I went to Mercy Hospital in the evening and middle of the night, because I couldn't breathe in this room. Now, here's another thing, and I'm so down living in this room. I don't drink alcohol. I stopped smoking, and now I started smoking. And I've stopped now again. I've stopped.
Okay.
Living in this room, I started smoking again.
You started smoking
because
again.
Because I figure I'm not going to make it much longer here, or especially when winter begins. So why not have a smoke? I'm going to be dead soon anyway. And then the good doctor in the Mercy, when he did my lung tests, Dr. Cullen, he asked me to stop smoking, so I've stopped now again.
Good man, well done. And what did you do with your little dog in Germany?
My dog is, in the times of communism, me and some people, we helped to... people to escape from there, you know, to get them into the West.
Yeah, great.
And there was a little girl, Nina, and we helped her. And she is now a veterinary, and she's got a little daughter, Nina, and they've got my dog.
Now what's your dog called?
My dog is named after my father. My father was a well-known singer in Cork, and people would say, look at that fella, he's a great singer. So my father's nickname was Fella. And that's the name of the dog.
Okay. By the way, how did you get involved in, which is very dangerous in East Germany, trying to help people escape? You could have been shot.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, but when I moved in there, I could cross the border at checkpoint.
You could, yeah, of course. Yeah.
And you know, they had no oranges, they had no bananas.
Yeah.
You couldn't get normal. And Kiwis, and I was crossing to West, and I lived in the East, and I'd bring, for the children in the house, I'd bring them Kiwis and oranges across the border. And
how
like
did you
that.
Get involved in helping people escape from
well,
East Germany?
Well, there was a fella on the job that I was with, and he finally told me that he knows of this. There were many groups around West Berlin, especially, who would try and dig tunnels under the wall, and they try and get people over the wall.
They try a hot air balloon to do anything to try and get across.
That's right. What we did was, I got an Irish passport that was out of date, and we put a photograph of this young girl Nina into the passport. So then we took her from East Berlin to Czechoslovakia, Prague, which was known as an open city.
Right.
And then you could get a flight from Prague. It was probably the only communist country where you could get a direct flight to a Western country.
Yeah, yeah.
And we took off from Prague to Amsterdam.
Well done, on the Irish passport.
Yeah, on the Irish passport.
She escaped. And did she go back and live in West Germany, so as it was then?
She's now living in West Berlin in a place called Neukölln.
It's a place. How many people do you reckon you helped get across, get out?
Nine.
Well done.
Nine. But the two guys before me, the two guys I was with, they've got maybe 47, 48 people out.
Hopefully the authorities are listening to your plea, and the fact that you're only 63 and people can hear your COPD, as you say, you're in the stage three of it. But would you have more friends in Germany than here, Dave?
Well, I'm meeting old friends from here.
Okay, and that's I don't want to keep coming back to the same point, but that's one of the reasons you came back here.
Well, to go along the city. just meet people and
35 years in West Germany, East Germany, Russia, where else you mentioned Bulgaria, Czechoslovakia, Romania, you managed to hold on to your Cork accent.
Well, most people would lose their accent, but I had an old do you know a fellow from there's a fellow from Cork, and he was sing, "Do you want your old lobby washed down?"
Of course, yes. Yeah, well,
Jimmy Crowley.
Yeah, of course, the great Jimmy Crowley.
And I had a cassette from him. And I'd always listen. It was an interview with him, and I'd listen to that, so I'd keep me Cork accent, you know.
So Jimmy Crowley is responsible.
So he's responsible. Okay. It's his fault.
Yeah. And I bet you your dog, your Jack Russell fella, is not what he's called. I bet you he had a Cork bark, had he?
Oh, yeah. Well, he was a terrible.
Okay. Would you get a new dog, sorry, finally?
No, Jack Russell by a family who live along the corner.
And they're very good
to you. Every day,
what's that Jack Russell called?
Princess.
Okay, and you're a prince.
Yeah.
Dave, okay, we'll try and make a few phone calls. Again, James is still there. James, how are you now? You're still there, obviously. And Dave is in Cork City. He's got accommodation, but as you can hear, it's not suitable. Now, the two of you, by the way, are young men, James.
Yeah.
So I hope you can get a break. I hope you can, the services can be marshalled to help you, because it sounds like you've been caught between so many.
A rock and a rock.
And Dave, likewise with you, Dave, look after yourself.
Thank you very much.
And do you reckon all your friends know you're back in Cork, Dave?
Oh, they do now.
Okay. And are you known? You say your dad was known as Fella, the great singer. What are you known as? If you want to tell me.
Well, they call me Rory. I was a great fan of Rory Gallagher. I knew Rory well. And he's buried right behind me, mother and father, you know, St. Oliver's graveyard. He's buried right behind them, practically.
And one of Rory's great songs was about Kim Philby, the Cold War.
Philby. He loved
brilliant,
that stuff.
Brilliant track, brilliant. Okay, Dave, I wish you well. I hope somebody in power in Cork is listening, and likewise with you, James. But both of you, in different ways, have found good people, but a lot more needs to be done. Okay, James and Dave, thank you both. 51551 joe@rt.ie.
Joe Duffy!
Talk to Joe on 1850-715-815.
Joe at RT.ie. At the start of the programme, we were contacted by two people, two completely separate people from two parts of the country, Dave and James. James has been living in his car. He's homeless for the last 14 weeks and not in good health. He's a very young man. Dave contacted us from Cork, lived in Germany and other parts for 35 years, and he has COPD, the chronic obstructive pulmonary disease. He says he's in his fading stages, even though he's a young man at 63, and he wanted to come back to Cork because Cork is where he, as you could hear clearly from his accent, is where he's born, reared, and still loves and doesn't want to. He's haunted by the fact that a friend of his died alone and wasn't found for 6 months, and the accommodation he's in is not suitable. Now, Martina is in Waterford. Martina, good afternoon.
Hello, Joe.
How are you? You say COPD isn't properly serviced in this country, properly resourced. What's your situation, Martina?
Well, I'm at stage three, and I was diagnosed with this as a result of me having a test in England.
Mm-hmm.
And that opened up the pathway to go on a pulmonary rehab program.
Okay.
Now, I was referred on this program 18 months ago. And they're at the moment, so I thought, well, okay, rather than going back to England, let me try and sort of pursue it this side. And I was told that they're no longer taking names for it. Now, I heard since only through the grapevine say that the lady that ran it is on maternity leave, which is fine. I mean, all of that.
And what would you be, sorry, what would you be getting in that service?
Well, what you do, you exercise for about, I think, approximately 4 hours a week, okay? And it's quite intensive exercise to the point that it opens up the airways and it expands your lungs. You see, I've rejoined a group 4 years ago, Joe. I joined this group, and there was a group membership then, say, of 18 people in this area now. And I thought, oh, my God, I'm not that bad. I'm not, you know, and I found it depressing. But I had two very bad attacks earlier in this year where I had to have steroids and antibiotics, and it still didn't clear up. And I really haven't recovered from that, because I've gone from stage two to stage three, which then means, so if you look at 1 to 5, 5 is means that you're either dead or you're in bed on oxygen.
Oh,
so stage three.
And Martina, unfortunately, can anyone help you to go on this course in the UK for 7 weeks?
Well, no, I mean, I borrowed the money from the credit union, and I'm doing it independently. Yeah, what I'm trying to do is to any damage that's done, it's done. And with COPD, you don't know the damage that is done until it is done, and then it's irreparable.
Okay, I'm sure we'll be coming back to it tomorrow. Martina, thanks again for your call. Sorry, it's truncated, but it's over 3 o'clock. We'll talk again. That's Martina in Waterford. Paddy Carney on sound, Laura Lee Davis is the BCO, Fergus Sweeney produced, and Ray Darcy is next.